The prelim final loss has been avenged. Today on The Raw Deal, we're going to chat through a very strong win against the Cats that has set things up quite perfectly for round one. We're also going to talk the AFLW bombshells of the last week that have left many people around the club absolutely fuming. And the club's GM of Infrastructure, Strategy and Government Relations, Jake Anson, is going to join us to talk all things related to the new Gabba and where the Lions will play in the interim period. Welcome to The Raw Deal. My name is Dom Fay. Mike Whiting joins me here in the Cooperoo Studios as always. And Mike, it was a bitter pill to swallow September last year when the Cats sent us off the MCG in pain. But, oh, we are return serve. Heartily last Thursday night.
I love that term, avenged. They avenged that prelim. I'm sure the Cats would be heartbroken now, leaving Brighton Homes Arena in disgrace.
Absolutely disgraceful. I mean, because this is the thing. You can't. This is what I'd be asking Chris Scott if I was a hard-hitting journo. Can you do it when it matters, Chris?
Well, see, what happens is they didn't put up Chris Scott after they played the other night. They rolled out Sean Grigg, an assistant coach.
They did.
I thought, yeah, that's weak.
That is classic Geelong.
Yeah.
They can't stand up on the big stage.
We won't say that Brisbane did the same and put an assistant coach up, but that's, yeah.
See, I've said this to you about footy for years. Sure, you can do it in front of 100,000 at the G in the last day of September, but can you do it a Thursday night in Springfield in March?
Anytime, any place, apparently,
yeah,
but
apparently
except
not.
Springfield.
Lost a lot of respect for the Cats the other night, to be honest. But we'll talk about all of that shortly. Now, Jake Anson was going to join us in person in the studio this week. Jake has texted me this morning saying he's come down with a cold. He's not well. He's recovering. But he's willing to join us via Zoom. Now, we are just about to hit the, you know, very big round one for you, Mike. The last thing you want is to come down sick. So we've quarantined Jake. He's going to join us via Zoom instead. So that is coming up shortly. We've got all the questions to put to Jake in a moment. But there is so much going on at the moment around the club that it's kind of hard to know where to begin. Do we start with the AFLW stuff? Do we start by talking about the captaincy announcement? Do we talk about Geelong? Where do we actually begin?
Stas wanted us to talk about AFLW.
Oh, yes. I wonder how much Stas stands by that statement now. Perhaps less so. But yeah, I mean, I know that there's so much going on in the men's stuff, but I think the AFLW stuff has been the massive bombshell of the last week with Greta Bodie and Emily Bates both leaving the club and joining the Hawks. It's kind of, I mean, this is so different to the men's competition. The men's competition, you get wind that you might be about to lose a player generally maybe a month before it happens at least. Mm. Whereas here, it felt like it was 2 days before, from the moment we got wind to the moment there's an image on social media of the two of them in Hawks jumpers. I mean, Mike, I know that it's hard for you to editorialize as the objective journo, but describe your emotions of that news last week to me.
Well, it was I've got to be honest. I haven't – Stas is right in this respect. Like, I think what he was alluding to when he asked if we were going to cover the women's stuff. I haven't taken a lot of notice over the past couple of months. Once the women's season finished, the men were into preseason straight away. Then I went on a break for a while. I came back. It was men's preseason. And I hadn't even, I had hardly even given the women's team or competition much of a thought. So it did come as a surprise to me when our man from AFL.com, Riley Beveridge, I know only journalists care about this, but Riley dropped the bomb that they were likely to lose Emily and Greta to Hawthorn,
yeah,
and then
crazy.
A day or two later, as you say, they're gone. So it did come as just as much of a shock to me as it did to probably most of the people listening. Obviously, Emily in particular and Greta to a lesser extent had been chased not even 12 months earlier.
Mm.
It was the back end of the previous season, which finished in March, April 2022. So I guess there's always a chance, but you thought once they'd been warded off once, bit of extra pay in the new CBA for last season. Emily certainly on the top bracket of pay. There's no secrets about that. So you thought, oh, well, they've probably warded off the main danger.
Mm.
So to come back did get certainly surprised me. And I think without speaking to a lot of people around the club about it, I think there was a surprise around the club for sure.
It's interesting. I've made the comment to you. I've picked Mike up from Metricon Stadium today. We've done the drive down from Carrara to Cooperoo because
Heritage Bank Stadium.
What have I done?
If any Suns personnel are listening,
Heritage Bank Stadium. Sorry, that's going to take a while to get used to. That's going to take a while to get into the brain. I did notice actually at the Suns training field next to their admin headquarters, They had like a robotic mower out today. Did you see
that? I didn't see that. No, I was in too much of a rush to get to the car door.
It was either, well, that's fair. It's either a mower or a line marker. I couldn't tell, but whatever it was like watching one of those, you know, those vacuum cleaners that do their own thing.
Yes.
And I thought, geez, it's futuristic on the Gold Coast, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, no expense spared for them. I mean, the Lions have got an $80 million Springfield facility, but the Suns have got automated mowers.
But we were on the drive back down from Carrara together, and I made the point to you that there's some interesting synergy for me in the fact that the Lions men's team have had two successful eras, you know, the one under Lee Matthews and now this one under Chris Fagan, which have both come off the back of Hawthorn legends in those two. And it kind of, it lines up a little bit to me that maybe the Hawks women's team will have their first successful run off the back of two Lions legends in Greta Vody and Emily Bates. That's me trying to put a bit of dark humor on it, because it is absolutely gutting. And I think the Lions women's fans have found this just to be heartbreaking the whole way through, that because you're one of the, you know, early adopted clubs, what you've seen over this journey is star after star. We saw it way back with the very beginning with Taylor. And then it's just continued since then, chipping away. The Lions have done their best to hold on to the talent they can. But to lose these two this week just feels like the heart and soul a little bit.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, Emily was the first draftee taken by the club, number two overall in that very first draft. Yeah. She's a local girl. She's from here. She grew up playing the sport.
Yeah.
Obviously a league best and fairest. She's won the club best and fairest a couple of times, a real pin-up girl of not only Brisbane but the comp. So to lose her is, yeah, like you say, is gutting. We'll learn the compensation in the next couple of days.
So there will be compensation?
There will be. That'll be announced on, I believe it's Thursday. It's either Wednesday or Thursday, but it's going to pale in comparison to what Hawthorn are getting in a league best and fairest.
Yeah.
And Greta Bodie, a player that Brisbane – picked from obscurity, really, like another sport. They headhunted her, essentially, and more importantly, developed her from a, someone that had come from another sport to an All-Australian and one of the more damaging half forwards in the competition, as skillful as anyone in the front half of the ground. So, yeah, gutting losses. And, of course, I think it's a lot of people are saying you can't blame the girls, and you can't, because we don't know the financial terms to what they've signed and what they've left and what they've gone to. And obviously there's life experiences, and that, you know, the girls probably like to try a new city and go and live in Melbourne. But boy, that's a bitter pill for Brisbane to swallow. When they've obviously got a very successful team. One of the quotes from Emily 12 months ago, when she knocked back the initial advances from Hawthorn, was along the lines that she was chasing team success. And she said that the Lions had a sisterhood. She wanted team success. And she said, the grass isn't always greener. The grass is green where you water it. It was a line that Emily was quite proud of. I think she thought about it, and she thought, I'm going to show everyone how invested I am in Brisbane. And less than 12 months later, she's gone to the greener grass, the quote unquote greener grass. So
things change quickly in footy.
It does, and I don't like being the person that holds people up to quotes from 12 months ago, because things change.
Yeah,
we know that personal circumstances and team circumstances and whatever change, but that's a tough one to swallow for sure. So that's losing a couple of All Australians, but what Brisbane has shown is that they'll butter up and they'll go again, and they'll have a very competitive team next year, unquestionably. But that's two enormous holes to fill.
It would certainly be a dumb thing to do to write off the Brisbane Lions AFLW team, although I'm sure they'd love you to. If Craig Starcevich is listening,
back to the old days, the first 4 or 5 years.
He would love for the media to write off the Lions. That would just set the stage perfectly. So anyway, it's going to be a fiery season ahead when that kicks off in August. Let's turn our attention to the men's stuff, Mike, just before Jake Anson does join us and the Cats win on Thursday night, which, I'll be honest, has worried me. This is too good a preseason. It's too much optimism. As I've said on this podcast before, the last time there was this much optimism in a preseason was 2013, and we all remember how that season began. I'm probably being unreasonable, but it shows the scars of supporting a team that's, you know, struggling. They do stick around for many years, those scars. But you couldn't have asked for much more, really, from this preseason. And, you know, to play both last year's grand finalists, to win both games really comfortably and never really look challenged all that much by either of them. I mean, does it mean anything? No, of course it doesn't. But it means a little bit more than it would if you'd lost both games or if, you know, they'd been ugly scraps.
Yeah, that's fair? Yeah, it is. Nothing's gone wrong, I think. And that's what you're trying to get through preseason with. Yep, players have got some form, which we'll get to, I'm sure, the guys that have impressed us. Some players have got some extra minutes that they needed, and there's been no injuries come out of it really. So that's the big win. It is hard to read much into it. We talked last week, Sydney were playing a different number of players, playing them in different positions occasionally, spinning more players through the midfield than perhaps Brisbane were. And obviously against Geelong, no Hawkins, no Cameron, which I don't think can be understated. We saw in the first quarter Geelong, this would be like a nice little, I think Chris Fagan would have loved that result on Thursday because they had a win, they played well, but there's also some stuff he can point to and say, hey, we were smacked in the clearances in the first quarter. Geelong had the ball camped inside their forward 50. They just couldn't score. Mm. I think if Hawkins and Cameron are there, it's maybe there's a different story. There's a couple more goals. And Brisbane got them on the counter-attack, which was good to see. That slick ball movement was really promising to see from the back half. You can't live off that an entire game.
No.
But then as the game evolved, we saw Brisbane start to become a bit more dominant around the stoppages. So a lot to like, a couple of question marks, which I think is good on the way to round one. But yeah, lots to like. And you're right. You couldn't ask for much more the past fortnight.
So I don't know if you know yet when your best 22 will be published on afl.com.au, but have you finished it? Have you come up with it yourself?
We found out today. So we're recording Monday afternoon, as we always do. We have to submit our best 22 by Wednesday, and it sounds like I tell you what I will do, Dom. Do we want to come back to this before the end of the show? Sure, let's come back to it before the end of the show. We will take a pause, which no one on here will know, for 2 minutes while I write my team down, and I'll drop it on here.
Oh, you're allowed to do that, are you?
Well, I can. Yeah. And I'm comfortable enough to do it.
There we go. Brilliant. Well, I look forward to that. So stick around this episode. You will get Mike Whiting's best 22. Couple of interesting points to come out of the game off field. I saw a few characters from the Lions years gone by at the ground on Thursday night. I saw Craig and Mel Lambert were there on the hill together watching the game. So don't know. They're still involved with the Giants again now, aren't they? I think so.
Yeah, so I think so.
Not sure what brought them up, just maybe a trip out to see the new Michael Voss Stadium, Michael Voss Oval maybe, I'm not sure. And I also noticed Bob Sharpless there standing at the sideline or the boundary line watching the game right near the coach's box. And
proud moment for Bob, I'd imagine.
It was an interesting thought. He looked at me and nodded as I walked past, and I thought, is he doing that to everybody or is he a diehard Raw Deal listener? So g'day to Bob if you are listening and you do know the podcast. But it was an interesting one to think about, you know, how many hurdles this project had. And, you know, this is a guy who obviously has been one of the key architects behind the entire town that is Springfield in Bob Sharpless. And he got to see, how many did they get on Thursday night? Did you see a crowd in the end? I'm not even sure I did.
I think the official number was something around about 5,000, which I kind of thought was unders if it holds 7.5 we've been told. We've been told it holds 7.5 to 8,000. I thought it was pretty full, actually.
Like, I thought so too.
I thought it might be sort of 6.5 or thereabouts.
But for a Thursday night in Springfield to have that many people there, you know, and those who've been for a couple of times now are probably experiencing, if you drive, the traffic that gets backed up before the Springfield exit can be a bit of fun. But to have that many people there, I actually at one stage heard someone sitting behind me on the hill when Paddy Dangerfield took the ball, said his line was, "Who would have ever thought Patrick Dangerfield would come to Springfield?" And I thought, there's probably, without this stadium, there was a very slim chance Paddy Dangerfield ever finds his way to Springfield.
Think he'd just have Orion Shopping Centre on his Brisbane bucket list?
Well, the lagoon is renowned, and the Cold Rock near the lagoon, not bad. One of the few Cold Rocks still kicking around the place, I think.
You know,
so
I've been out to Springfield a bunch of times now, and that will increase, obviously, now that we're close to the season. I haven't actually gone across to Orion yet. It's it's a 3-minute walk.
Mike, it's a great shopping centre, Orion.
I'm actually looking forward to getting out. I can't believe I haven't been across yet. I normally just grab something to eat at the cafe. I've forgotten the name of it already.
Wild Kitchen.
There you go. Weird because I've probably bought stuff from it a dozen times already, 15 times maybe. Fire my story and I jump back on the train and go home. But I've got to set aside a bit more time, I think, and duck across to Orion. But I don't think Paddy Dangerfield was thinking that. No, to your point.
I can heartily recommend the beef nachos at the Wild Kitchen. They're brilliant. I had them the other night.
Yeah, okay. I haven't had them. And yeah. I'm a big nachos man.
Are you? They're good nachos. Nachos are a meal that I find it shouldn't be as hard to get nachos wrong as so many cafes and restaurants.
Oh, my God. I know. I'm not going to dob the cafe in. I did have some about a week or two ago. And yeah, I'm going to steer
just
clear
average.
Next time I go there.
Yep. Seriously, it's nachos, of all the meals, it's not hard to get nachos right. I know we've gone off topic. I should put this to Jake Anson in a bit. Get nachos on the menu at the new Gabba. That I'd be so happy if you did that, Jake.
And mate, the pricing. Oh.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, that's a no. Let's say that might be a buy topic for us.
Well, actually, this is part of the interesting thing. The pricing at Wild Kitchen's brilliant.
It is.
It's really good.
It genuinely is.
I think it was like $12 for the beef nachos. And I thought, honestly, if I was at the Gabba, I'd need half a mortgage to get these. Yeah. With what you're giving me here, that would have been, I would not have got much exchange from a 50.
Some food trucks at Springfield, we may have needed half a mortgage as well.
Okay, didn't go there. I just stuck with Wild Kitchen. I stayed consistent there, Mike. Another interesting point from the game that I thought would be worth mentioning is Chris Fagan up in the coach's box, which I did see that. That's something they might need to work on, is a way for the coaches to get from the box to the ground without walking through the crowds. It's currently they're kind of blocking off the crowds walking through to get there. But are we going to see, do you think, Fags in the coaching box this year?
I haven't asked him, but I think we might.
Yeah. Okay.
I know that obviously initially when he started coaching Boundary Line, it was almost out of necessity after he ripped his hammy in the big freeze.
Right. I forgot about that.
It was just inconvenient for him to get up and down so many stairs, or it was just such a long walk and so difficult when he initially ripped that hamstring. And then he found out that, hey, it's great communicating with players when they come on and off the field. And I'm speaking as Chris Fagan here. I've got trust in Danny Daly at the time was sort of the strategy coach.
David Noble was in the box at that point.
He had such, experienced campaigners in the box that he had full trust in. So he was happy being the conduit between the players and the guys in the box. But now I think he's got a very experienced playing list. He might not need to speak to the players and coach, educate so regularly through the match. So, yeah, I got a feeling we might see him up in the box a bit more this year.
It's a very interesting point. I mean, I feel like part of the fun of Lions wins in recent years has been Fags reacting on the sideline, on the boundary line. I feel like it's going to be really upsetting. Sorry, I watched one NRL game this weekend. It was the Dolphins. I thought I should watch the Dolphins debut. And now I've used the phrase sideline twice in this podcast. What's happened to me? I'm a disgrace. Sorry, the boundary line.
When they go for the conversion.
I know. But I'm really worried, Mike, about what this might mean, because I feel like so much of the fun has been the shots of Fags with his arms in the air celebrating and hugging players. I think I'm going to really miss that if he's back in the box, but we'll see how Fags goes with that. Now, Jake Anson is going to jump in any minute. I've just sent in the Zoom link, so we'll have him join us shortly here in the Raw Deal.
And then move around so he can see me too.
Yeah, move. Do you like this? I mean, people can't see this, so we'll paint the picture, but I've bought a tripod for the phone this week, because I did think when we were talking to Will last week, the angle was, I had the phone down on the table, angled up at us, and it was all a bit weird, really. So I thought this would work. We've gone high tech, and Jake will be in this any moment now. I don't think he is particularly well. He said his voice is a bit hoarse, but he can give us all the data and all the facts that he does that we do need. So as we wait for Jake,
this is great radio. Do we call this radio still? What do we call it? It's great audio.
It's great audio.
I've just tried to take a picture of our setup here, but it's grim.
Well, Mike, you can post a picture of that maybe in the Raw Deal Facebook group for our patrons in there. I'm sure they'd love to see that that behind the scenes thrilling content.
That is grim. I'm not a photographer.
but look, I mean, on the other side of our chat with Jake, there is so much else to talk through. I want to talk about the on-field performances from the weekend. I want to talk about Cam Rayner, because the next time we see Cam Rayner play, we're gonna know, is he a defender? Is he a forward? How much are they sticking with this? And I also want to hear your best 22.
I was
going
to say, I've committed to this best 22. I said it'll take me 2 minutes.
Yes.
Just hearing the name Cam Rayner just gave me a little bit of stress, and I just... It might take me 5 or 10 minutes.
Well, we'll get to all of that, as well as the captaincy stuff on the other side of that. In fact, as we do wait for Jake, let's just jump into the captaincy stuff until he does join. Obviously, the announcement has been made, Harris Andrews and Lachie Neale co-captains. I think this is how you tipped it was going to go a few weeks ago, so this is a good Nostradamus win for you. If only I'd played the fortune-telling music when you said that.
I should have done that, shouldn't we?
That would have been brilliant. But anyway, so that's the situation. We're going to got the two of them. We've got Hugh McCluggage as vice-captain. Seems for something that originally seemed quite open, it almost did end up feeling like the obvious choice. What I want to ask you before I ask for your thoughts on that particularly, Mike, is the press conference itself. You've been to many press conferences over the years. Was that the weirdest presser? Because the footage that we saw on Instagram stories and whatever else had you guys on a boat on the Brisbane River.
Yeah, look, I've got to say, this is the clear delineation of us not being a club podcast anymore. Because it was pretty weird. Well, I think it was.
So take us into the day. So you get an invite.
So we got an invite.
Yeah.
I'd known a couple of days before that they were going. The plan was to announce the captains on a Wednesday.
Okay.
Now, I am going to sound like that jerk here. I did get wind on Tuesday night who it was.
Yeah, okay.
But I did think, you know what, it's captaincy. It's a big deal for the club, but it's not a huge deal competition-wide. Like, and I thought the club – and I knew the club had put so much effort. They were so invested in announcing this on a boat. We were meeting – all the journos had been told to go to it was near I'm shocking. I should have had this written down somewhere. But it's near the Botanical Gardens, near Stanford Plaza. There's like a little – anyway, we went down there somewhere and this boat
Eagle
came –
Eagle Street Pierway, yep.
Yeah, not that far down, but sort of nearer to the Botanical Gardens.
Sure.
And there was this walkway to get out onto the dock, I guess it is, to get on the boat. And there's all the captains, the Brisbane Lions captains, which I think they filmed on Instagram or Twitter or something and showed, here's all the Brisbane Lions captains with stickers. And I thought, oh, this would have been really awkward if this was broken before this happened, because they put all this effort in, and which was great. And it's a great – I tell you what it did, though. I thought it was – a bit over the top, but it did work in terms of getting coverage, because all the TV journos turned up, and that's who it was for. It was for television, because they got to have some different views, some different. It wasn't just a backdrop, a random backdrop at the club and captain speaking. There was some great vision for the TV networks to use, but I'm a written guy, and it didn't really matter. It doesn't really matter where they have it for me. So
take me into then the actual boat trip. So where did they take you from? How long were you on the boat?
So we're
together?
On the boat for an. We were on the boat for 60 minutes. Okay, we got on near the gardens. We headed down the river, sort of under the Story Bridge.
Yeah.
Kept heading down towards New Farm, and then once the official announcement was made, we just kind of sat in the water for 15 minutes in the one spot, 20 minutes, just sort of sat there while
chatting? Did you chat with Fags? What did you do?
So we got to go upstairs and chat to the players. We're just sitting around and we got to go and chat to them. We could have chatted to them one-on-one if we wanted to at that stage. There was the three men that you've mentioned, Hugh McCluggage and the two co-captains, Harris and Lockie. Fags was up there as well. So we chatted to Fags, and we'll get to this as well. But that's when the Lions had slipped in then that he'd re-signed for 2 years. So I said to Fags then, gee, you slid that in at the bottom of the press release, mate. We'd spoken to Chris Fagan at a press conference the day before. Nothing was mentioned then. I said, gee, you slipped that in. And he sort of had his little chuckle, like he's in a good frame of mind, Fags. And then he came back a minute or two later and said, mate, we didn't know yesterday. I had to go and negotiate whether I was earning $1.5 or $2 million a year. Ha, 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 ha. That's why I couldn't tell you. Gave his little granddad chuckle, which I thought was a good little Fags joke.
I love Fags chuckle.
So he was in a good mood. And it was a great occasion for the club. They were ushering in. It feels weird calling it a new era, though, when the current captain is still the previous captain is still on the list. I know what they're getting at.
Yes.
That it's a new leadership. But I thought, oh, I wonder how Zorks would feel looking at this.
Well, and
he's probably fine now, to be honest, but
I don't think he'd be. It seems he's pretty willing and across the whole thing.
Yeah, he is.
Run on Chris Fagan's sense of humour. I would love to go to a Fagan family Christmas, because I feel like Fags has everything about him which makes me think he's the sort of person who'd give you something that's clearly wrapped like a bottle of wine and go, it's a CD. A bit of a chuckle.
One of those. Yep.
You know, I reckon I think he might have been born as a granddad.
Yep.
Actually, do you know, I remember, I'm not sure if anyone here is a listener of the Will Anderson, Charlie Clawson, Two Guys, One Cup podcast. They do their AFL podcast. But they went through Chris Fagan's old player profile a bunch of years ago when he was playing down in Tasmania. And one of his quotes, one of his favorite quotes that he used in this when he was in probably his mid-20s, I loved this so much. I think the question was, what's your favorite drink? And his response was, you can beat an egg, but you can't beat a cup of tea. And I don't know if anyone has a copy of this Chris Fagan player profile from Hobart in, 30, 40 years ago.
Mid-80s.
But does that not scream Chris Fagan, that quote to you?
I just love that. You could have almost said, you know, who said this quote? And we would have needed no more than three guesses.
Well, I just love the fact that that especially happened when he's in his mid-20s or maybe early 30s, that that's the humor he's going with even back then, Fags.
Yep.
I love it. I love it.
So, it was a good day. And I know I sort of half took the mick at the start of this chat, but in terms of it was over the top for me being a written journo, but I saw the value in it for the club a bit broader with the TV journos, and there was a couple of radio journos there as well. And it's just a great chance to probably meet in a little less formal of a setting.
Yeah,
so you did get to sit around and on a boat just out on the Brisbane River sitting there.
Well, I think we've just had Jake Anson jump into the Zoom chat. Have you got us, Jake?
I do, Dom.
Well, you've just jumped into the podcast as Mike Whiting's been reporting his story from the captaincy announcement on the boat last week. You've been at a couple of press conferences in recent years, Jake. Have you ever thought of doing one of them on a boat?
Oh, I don't think my budget generally extends that far, Dom, but maybe now that the Gabba's got a $2.7 billion funding commitment from the Queensland government, maybe we'll be in super yacht territory.
Oh, that's true. That's certainly not far off. Look, we are so grateful you've joined us on the podcast today. We did mention off the top that you're not feeling the best. So I feel we've got to start with a personal question, Jake. How you doing?
Oh, I've got some sultry tones as one previous video conference said today. I don't know. I've tested negative for COVID, but still remaining as conservative as I can be to make sure we don't infect any players out at Brighton Homes Arena in the lead into round one for the AFL. So I'm quarantining myself at home.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were hoping to have you in here, but we obviously got to save Mike Whiting and his health for round one when he's riding down at, and I'll get this right this time, Heritage Bank Stadium down at Carrara.
That's it. Yeah.
That's correct. They've got
that's
it now.
Right, yep. So Heritage Bank, Brighton Homes, all these.
Working on the new names. But look, there's so much to talk with you about, Jake. You are, I think we mentioned this to you before, but a bit of a fan favourite. I feel like every time we announce that you're coming on the podcast, the old version or this one this week, people kind of do go nuts. So we've got a bunch of questions to get through to you. To begin with, though, I think the last we checked in with you was probably a few months before Springfield opened. It's been a pretty crazy last few months of obviously an AFLW grand final on short notice, getting the Gabba stuff signed off on, then having the whole club move out there. How have things been for you lately, and where do things sit right now as we speak?
Oh, look, it has been a massive few months. Partly I might be run down because we've been literally running around putting together everything from the season 7 AFLW grand final through to what was a sellout last Thursday night for our men's practice match against Geelong. And it's just been phenomenal. The reception around Brighton Homes Arena over recent months has been personally and professionally gratifying to see how many of our fans and members and community partners have been genuinely really excited and impressed with the new home that we've got. It's great when players are tearing up when they come in to see it for the first time, or when people like Fags or Lockie make comment about how impressed they are and having visited international benchmarks. But it has been something of a bit of an overwhelming whirlwind. Even last week, just as an example, I think I gave 9 or 10 tours to disparate groups, including Papua New Guinean cabinet ministers, the Vanderbilt and University of Nebraska, AIS groups, the Broncos. We've got a sort of gaining this international reputation as best practice for both the elite facilities, but also how those can be used to embrace community use and to create new touch points throughout the community. So that's been really positive, but with it's come probably a lot more public interest than we'd initially expected. So really, really stoked with what we've achieved, and players and staff love it. We just now need to get into the next two or three big projects that we've got coming down the line.
Jake, obviously it has been a whirlwind. You got pitchforked almost into the AFLW grand final the minute it was the ground was available to be used. Now you've had an official pre-season match as well. Was there any teething problems? From the outside, it seemed like everything ran very smoothly, but I imagine you're heavily critiquing it as you go through this, the process. Like, anything bob up that you think needed to be sort of fixed for the future?
Yeah, plenty did. And it's probably a great testament to the staff around the club and the people that we had, the contractors working on those matches, that externally not much was, I mean, nothing went badly. I mean, to get great rave reviews in the Courier Mail the day after about how fantastic the experience was for people was really fantastic. We had everything from like toilets blocking on the day to medical emergencies for spectators to, and those are all things that happen every day at the Gabba. I think what's different first time you open a venue is you don't necessarily, all the stakeholders working on the project from the police to the counter-terrorism officers, the ambulance, the fire guys, none of them have ever been involved in Springfield in an event of that magnitude. So it's all new for them. So there's a lot of backgrounding. Would the transport system stand up? How is the trains going to cope? How do you get the messaging out to our supporters, but Melbourne's travelling supporters and all the other people coming into state for the venue about how to get to Brighton Homes Arena and what Springfield requires by way of parking and transport. And all of that was new to us. So there was particularly people like Monique Sabin and in our events team and Sarah Sharp, who was working with the Lions from the AFL, who worked pretty much around the clock till 3 a.m. every night in the week leading into the AFLW Grand Final to make sure that we'd have everything covered off. And to be honest, we were doing it again last week leading into the preseason match because we're still bedding in new staff. We've got a operational gym on site now that we didn't have in November, which has a couple of thousand members. So getting comms out to them about how I can access all the gym facilities and whilst the rest of the stadium's running as a stadium is there's just always going to be new teething considerations, I think, for the coming months. And it's a good position for the club to have, to be in have so many, when you think about the past seasons we've had, playing at Burpengary, Gary, difficult to get to, reasonably small crowds against probably not the same degree of competition as, say, the reigning premiers in Geelong. It's great to have the best fixture of the round and play it in front of a sellout crowd and do it under lights. That's a huge turnaround from perhaps where the club was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, and as someone who was there last Thursday, I did see you briefly, Jake, when I was walking in and said, you know, this is exceptional. And I think that that was the feeling around the place for those who were there for the first time was that you've done an incredible job of making this place feel like home for the club so quickly and quite a special home too, which leads me maybe to my next question, which is how do you reckon it would go hosting AFL-level games for maybe 4 years if anyone needed that to happen for any random reason, maybe later this decade?
Can you think of a club that needs a new home?
Well, we're just throwing it out there as a possibility. I mean, obviously, this is one of the main reasons people were hoping we could get you on, Jake, is figuring out what on earth's going to happen now that we know the Gabba's definitely being knocked down. What's going to happen for those 4 years? Because that is probably the biggest talking point for the medium-term future of the club. Where are we going to play for 4 years? Can you give us an insight as to where that sits today?
I can, but I think to take one step back, it's probably worth mentioning or just reflecting upon the fact that since we've spoken last time, the Queensland government's come out having assessed the four options. I think we might have talked about them perhaps a year ago, but they were looking at whether they used the Gabba in any guise in Olympics at all. And then they looked at, is that a redevelopment? Is it a partial reconstruction or a cheap, for lack of a better term, rebuild at the lowest possible cost? Or is it a full rebuild of a modern stadium to modern expectations and an international standard? And the government has opted, with the federal government and the IOC, to opt for that last of those options, which is the full redevelopment, which will be not just the stadium, but the full neighbourhood around the Gabba, inclusive of all the precincts, the transport connectivity, better pedestrian access, walking distance to the city via New Green Bridge to the Eagle Street, redevelopment of Vulture and Stanley Streets down to South Bank so that people can easily walk from those activity clusters. And then giving us a world standard 53,000 seat venue for a legacy. It'll be 50,000 in Olympic mode, and for cricket and AFL going forward, 53,000 before the games and into the future, which was essentially what the club requested and briefed in, which was to say that we did some modelling and we think till 2048 we can continue to then grow through that period to the point where we're regularly selling that many seats. And if all that comes about, the Brisbane Lions will be playing out of the best stadium in Asia Pacific, hands down, and probably one of the top four or five stadiums in the entire world come 2030. And that's something tremendously exciting for the club members and fans and players and officials to get around. And even just generally for football supporters in this city, because whether you're barrack for Collingwood or Essendon or, God forbid, any of those clubs, you'll be able to visit Brisbane and have this wonderful experience of staying downtown or at Howard Smith Wharves and walking to or taking quality public transport to the Gabba and seeing the Lions play your team in a world-class environment. And I think that's it's great that we've got having the next challenge of finding a contingency venue, but that is just an amazing opportunity and well worth the short-term pain. I think that the redevelopment's going to pose for the club over those 4 years leading into 2030. So, without harping on that too much, that's just going to transform our football club from a match day perspective. And so we turn our attention to the next challenge. And we're very, very far down a process that's been going on for about 12 months with Stadiums Queensland and Treasury staff at state government level, and inclusive of the AFL's strategy team, the same guys that are doing the Hobart, Macquarie Point Stadium and have been involved in the development of Optus and Marvel redevelopment, the Adelaide Oval, all of that. And we are assessing four venue options. One, they're all out in the public realm at the moment. So Brighton Homes Arena upgrade, somewhere closer to 20,000 in capacity. The Metricon Stadium in an almost as-is, Heritage Bank Stadium is in an as-is arrangement. It's going to take a little bit of time for that one.
It caught me up earlier in the episode, Jake. You're not alone.
and then we're looking at a redevelopment of the R&A show ring, which is the showgrounds, the Ecker grounds in the centre of the city, which will be on a new Cross River Rail station from end of next year, and that would be to a capacity of 20,000-ish, maybe a little bit more. And then the last one's a redevelopment of the old ANZ stadium, CUSAC, essentially known QE2 stadium. It's got a few different names at Nathan, which was the 1982 Commonwealth Games venue for Brisbane, but was basically a stadium sort of built on a temporary basis in 1982, and it's had some renovations in the early 90s for the Broncos to play out of, but it's currently 48,000 capacity, but the proposal that we're dealing with is reducing that capacity significantly to the around 30 mark. So all of them have obvious benefits and aspects that probably aren't ideal in terms of whether it be location, the existing facilities that are there, transport access, and then other considerations like sequencing or fixturing of events. So, for example, the Suns use Heritage Bank, which is fine because we do the fixturing for that, but the QE2 stadium is also shared by the Firebirds, Bullets, and a host of boxing events and other minor sport activities that happen in that precinct that already have transport considerations and other parking needs and things. So there's just, and then the Ecker hosts the Ecker. Brighton Homes Arena for us also hosts our training and our academy and all of that. So we need to make sure that in whatever process looks like, we take into account all of those considerations. So where we're at, we are doing a capital upgrade assessment or a downgrade of capacity at CUSAC to understand what modern toilets and modern food and beverage outlets and all of those things cost for the venues other than Heritage Bank. And we will have that detail through this week. It'll be on my desk by Thursday. What is happening in the background is we're doing a really detailed deep dive model of our revenue and cost base at the Gabba to understand what our projections are for the next couple of years. So how much do we make off every Chico roll? How much do we make, or what are the exorbitant fees associated with looking after fish in the media studio?
Mate, I can tell you how much. It's about $2 for a bottle of water. Oh, I was going to say, for a bottle of water, that's about $7 for a bottle of water, sorry.
That's all I ever hear from the media. But no, in all seriousness, we're looking at the cost base. We want to understand really thoroughly where the risks are to our model in moving to any of the other locations. And then basically what will happen is we'll understand what the financial impacts are of the four various options. And then it's going to be a conversation by the Lions board and the AFL, and then with government bureaucrats and probably ministers around, okay, what best accommodates our fans, what best accommodates the, make sure that we can retain membership, grow community engagement and continue to add new fans and make sure that people can reasonably see us, but at the same time recognising that the government's already outlaying a lot of money on the Gabba and that there are other priorities that need to be funded elsewhere. And cricket's part of this process as well, so it's not just us that will be adversely affected by the rebuild, but it is a significant concern for the club because, as you're both aware, we have a debt exceeding $10 million at the moment that needs to be, on current trajectory, would be paid down considerably by 2030 if we didn't have this, being
expense turfed
out for 4 years. So what it does for our business modelling over a longer period as a club is just increase a greater deal of uncertainty about what we can generate by way of revenue and pay down with our debt repayment obligations to the AFL and to our bank. And with that is what else we can do with that money. And but that's investment in our community programs. That's investment in our staff and our players and our A4W program. So it's all good to say, yeah, you'll take a hit financially and just cop it. But the reality is that may have flow-on impacts to everything from our W programs through to community programs, and we're trying to avoid that wherever possible.
Jake, there's so many moving parts here, obviously, for all of these options, but they all seem to involve some sort of upgrade or renovation, or obviously there's a lot of works that need to be done. So when do you need to have an answer by?
Yeah, look, the reason we're doing the project and process at the moment is essentially as soon as the government committed to the full redevelopment of the Gabba, that was, we already had this process underway, but it has accelerated the need to get an answer for them. The government will be looking at, and we will be looking at making sure we've got enough time to do any capital upgrades. If we don't go to Heritage Bank, then any of the other options require a significant amount of redevelopment work. The good thing is that redevelopment will accrue as a legacy to one of the other sports or to AFL or to somebody. So it's not money wasted per se. It's money that'll accrue, like RNA is being used for the Olympics for equestrian. It already has 20 or 30 days a year exceeding 20,000 fans in that show ring for concerts and for ECA. The QE2 stadium does athletics and does a host of other sporting activities and concerts there as well. So whatever's spent will be money well spent, but we need to have time to do the design and deliver that precinct. Sorry for the frog in my throat. And make sure that we've got sufficient time to then build it so that we're not rushing approaching 2026 and we haven't got the stadium ready. So usually it takes about 2 years, I think, go to woe to do a renovation of this scale. So that's why we need to make sure there's some money in the forthcoming Queensland budget just to do the design aspects and make sure that process is starting to roll. And then the club's going to be juggling designing a brand new Gabba with designing this venue and delivery of it almost at the same time, which is a significant body of work.
Well, look, and I do want to get onto the new Gabba in a moment, but just back on this venue, I'm going to say what feels to me like the elephant in the room, and I've made this case on this podcast before, probably a number of times, that I think probably a lot of fans feel as though there is one standout option if the stars can align, which is RNA, just in the fact that it's centre of Brisbane, that it has a case to have that much, you know, capacity long term. It needs an upgrade anyway. And you could imagine it being a brilliant stadium to keep watching footy in the centre of Brisbane for, you know, for years to come. And so I suppose I don't know what the costs are and whether the RNA is going to end up being a lot more expensive than the other options. But can you understand the sentiment amongst the fan base that the RNA is this standout option, or do you see it differently?
No, I certainly can understand that. I think there's a bit of romanticism about that venue as well, where, and for me, knowing that the old grandstands are named after, around that venue are named after football administrators from like AFL football, or back as it was, Victorian rules administrators from the 1870s and 1880s, is a pretty romantic gesture. There's, I think in 1952, Geelong played Essendon there, so it's got a history of playing VFL fixtures and a host of Quaffle grand finals over the years and whatnot. I can see I've got this romantic notion of the future where you can host a gather round in Brisbane and you can get on a train or walk from the Gabba, and you know, you're either on Cross River Rail and within 6 minutes you're between the two venues, and in between you've got concerts on at the Brisbane Arena, Brisbane Live Project, or at Queen's Wharf. Or conversely, you're taking a scooter or walking up along the cliffs and through the valley to connect the two venues, and you know, the whole city comes alive. And that's one of the things that Sydney and Melbourne have got going for them. I think people forget that we've got a single oval venue in this city, but we're the third largest city in the country. It's actually the eighth largest oval, the Gabba. Geelong's even got a larger venue than we do now, and there's two larger than ours in both Sydney and Melbourne, and then obviously Adelaide Oval and Optus. So Brisbane is far behind the rest of the mainland capitals, and when it comes to you know, having a fantastic oval venue, if we end up with two of them, and that'll allow for future growth of our game and to bring those major events, that'd be a tremendous outcome, I think. But and the other things that the fans care about, Dom, you the ability to go out and have a dinner before the game, and the ability to get really good public transport. We did a survey of Gabba attendees last year, and 48% of people said that public transport's the number one consideration, or getting to the great game easily is the number one consideration in their choice to attend. That's a huge part. So I can see you sitting at the snack bar on King Street enjoying a soda water just before wandering across the street and then watching a game in front of these beautiful heritage grandstands. I think it can be done pretty cost effectively there too, because people forget, whilst the venue has some heritage grandstands and some seating needs to be replaced, a lot of the other infrastructure in that precinct's reasonably new. Parking. There were a lot of catering infrastructure in the convention centre. They got brand new Cross River Rail train line coming in. So whilst the seating there is the deficiency, the rest of that precinct's pretty special. And romantic notion. It's probably the standout.
And so, I mean, this question I think I have raised to you before, but if it does end up being the RNA, can you do the Ecker strawberry ice creams as part of the game day catering? Can we work that in somehow? Because if you're talking about getting people to the ground, something with Birdie Beetles maybe, or the Ecker strawberry sundaes, surely there's a tie in there.
Maybe at halftime we could have like a cattle show and just lead them out onto the middle of the oval and give one a ribbon or something. You know, that's,
well, actually, you mentioned the Ecker. Jake. So I'll just jump in, because that's a really interesting question about the Ecker, quite seriously. If it is the RNA, how much of the season would you lose access to the ground due to the Ecker? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, approximately 4 to 5 weeks, which, depending on how the AFL fixtures it, is probably two home games. So we went into that due diligence process just sort of understanding eyes wide open what it looks like. It's not like it hasn't been done before. The The Sydney show is held at Easter, and yep. the Giants' home ground is used extensively for it in the same manner. They just go and play in Canberra for a couple of rounds, and it's probably the time of year you do want to play in Canberra because it's reasonably still reasonably nice weather. But I think for us, that would beg the question of if we had to be out of there for two games, do you go to North Queensland? Do you play a game at Brighton Homes Arena? Do you go, which you could do little for home a smaller game in capacity Melbourne. As a one-off.
Yeah, well, Mike just said a home game in Melbourne.
Yeah, little home game in Melbourne,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I believe Swanee takes credit for being in 2018, I think, when the Suns had to be out of the Gold Coast for the Commonwealth Games, they took a game to Perth, and we were actually considering at the time whether we played a game over there just as a one-off. So I think he's even mooted playing games in Singapore and Auckland and stuff in the past. So who knows? I did a due diligence exercise for the board that included Mumbai and Singapore and Los Angeles and all those sort of, just to understand what the options were. But it's an exciting opportunity to probably engage with some of our fans. I met with some stakeholders from Cairns last week, and they were saying that the buzz around town when we played up there during COVID was really, really well received. But we haven't been up to North Queensland for a very long time because of rising attendances at the Gabba and also the Suns' entry into the competition. So I think there's a lot of Lions fans out there that would love to see us wherever we would play.
Should we talk Gabba, Dom?
Yeah, let's jump into the Gabba then. I mean, I think we've covered the interim stadium off enough for the moment. So let's jump into the brand new Gabba, which is going to be obviously very exciting. And we got a lot of questions that have come through about this, Jake. The first one's from me. The initial artist renders looked maybe a little bit generic, it might be fair to say. We chatted the other week about, you know, how you make a stadium uniquely Queensland or uniquely different in some way. I'm just curious about the design element, which the club has nailed so well out at Brighton Homes Arena. When you come to looking to design an Olympic stadium, a brand new Gabba, is there any scope to add some interesting design elements, or is it basically just going to look like the generic massive stadium we see all around the world?
The answers are yes. There's plenty of scope to make it. I think you look at Adelaide Oval, it's a beautifully designed and delivered example. I think the flip side of that is that big stadiums look the way they do because they're generally a bit of a function of what's happening on the inside and the inner bowl. And the Gabba is probably a great example of that, where if you were just sitting in the bowl and looking at the game, it actually doesn't look that bad. It feels like it's a really nice environment. I mean, there's some sightline issues on some of the seats, but for the most part, the experience is fantastic. The atmosphere is great when it's two-thirds full or greater. But the outside looks ugly, and that's just a function of just moving people around and some of the limitations that the site has. Where I think – so the renders that have been distributed to date are – like the process the government's done is a bit misleading. So we fed and Cricket fed in a list of what we call functional requirements. So these are all the rooms we need. These are the sizes of them. We went and took the state government stakeholders overseeing the project to Optus Stadium, Adelaide Oval. We took them to Marvel and MCG. They went to the SCG. So they did benchmarks across the country, trying to understand what back of house looks like, what all of the premium spaces look like, what all the bars and restaurants for GA seating look like, all of those considerations. That formed what we term a reference design. So that just gives you a really long list of different rooms, how big they've got to be. And then what they've spent the last 6 months doing is working with Populous, the architects, to see if that design for a 53,000 seat venue fits on the existing site.
Sure.
It does. It costs $2.7 billion associated with all the bits and pieces, where previously they hadn't done that work to understand the cost. That's where the cost blowout came from. And then the process now is to hand that reference design to an international design competition, where I'm expecting probably like 10 or 12 international architecture firms will be shortlisted for to do a proper ideas competition on what they would do with the stadium. That's when we'll get beautifully designed, you know, modern or heritage looking propositions put forward by international venues. be fair to say, I reckon Populous would want to be a part of that because they're one of the world's leading architecture firms. So I don't think that they would have done or spent all their ammunition on putting forward their most beautiful design for that reference competition, knowing that they're going to be going up against Cox Architecture and Manica and all the other big international sports stadium designers in the coming months. So that process will probably be known. I would expect by the end of 2023, we will have a really, really good understanding of architecturally what we're likely to get. And that's when footy and cricket will have much more of a say with those architects about how do we celebrate the club's history in the museum? How do we spruce up the concourses like they do at Adelaide Oval with beautiful historical information panels and statues and all the other stuff that you come to expect and love and people love about international venues that have got history. And I think that's so exciting for an international architect to work with the Gabba because it has everything from the first Tide Test match in 1966 through to the history of AFL football and prior to that, Quaffle football and you can even celebrate a dog track, I'm sure, or a Dell coming or whatever that might look like. But there's a multitude of aspects of its history to celebrate. And I think that's going to be something really exciting to work with because when the current Gabba was designed in the late 90s, it's fair to say that architecture firms weren't as focused on there was very utilitarian design. Let's just try to get people in and out, feed them a Chico roll, a pie and a 4X and get them out again. Sure. But not a lot of consideration about that journey into the stadium, out of that stadium and what it feels like when you're in there and creating a sense of place. So we've come a long way since then. I reckon it'll be outstanding.
And speaking of the current Gabba, one thing it is famed for is having maybe the best acoustics of any stadium in the country. You know, 30,000 there sounds louder than even sometimes 100,000 at the G. Do you have any tangible idea as to why that is and how it can be replicated, or is that a bit of a mystery?
Well, it's because we've got the best fans in
well,
Australia.
Well, that's true. Of course.
They're the loudest. They're the most fun. So I think that's got a big part to do with it. I mean, it's probably a function of the roof that we've got there and the pitch of the seating angles. It's a reasonably steep, particularly on the northern side and the upper tier on the southern Stanley Street side, we've got reasonably steep pitches. We'll have a very, very steep pitched seating arrangement for the new stadium almost certainly because the only way you can fit another 50% more people into that same footprint is to stack them on top of one another because the stadium can't really push out any further north or south because of the roads that are there. But I think we'll try to celebrate the Queensland environment and have that similar light structure on the roof and keep that intimacy of the venue. I think that's really important in any design.
And speaking of other big questions around the new Gabba then, I'm going to ask a contentious one. Drop-in pitch, is that going to happen or have Queensland Cricket won their war there?
Oh, look, I think that if I were a betting man, and I'm not, but I would bet against the drop-in pitch for a whole range of reasons, but not least of which, if anyone's seen the master plan for the design, it includes a pitch nursery out the back on the old state school or the current state school oval. So that indicates that they're growing a pitch out there, which means that they're probably not growing it in the middle of the oval. But
you're saying you would bet for the drop-in pitch. You think it is likely to happen?
Oh, the drop-in every day of the week. Because if you want to have, you've built a $2.7 billion asset to have it sit there for 6 months of the year just growing grass because you want to facilitate Sheffield Shield or whatever content there just seems to be a poor use of public funds, like when you could be hosting concerts and an array of other activity. The good thing about Australian football is, in theory, if we're not there one weekend, you can have ACDC come and play the next weekend and then disappear again, just like Harry Styles played at Heritage Bank a couple of nights ago and they'll be playing footy there again next weekend, or the weekend after. But the point being that we need that asset to be as heavily used as possible. The Lions and cricket both need it to be used regularly so that the hire fees aren't exorbitant, and the city should expect and demand that if they're spending that much on a new stadium, that it's not just growing grass for 6 months of the year and doing nothing else.
Jake, I think our free Zoom meeting is going to wrap up anytime in the next 5 minutes or so. So we might lose you rapidly here. So I'm just going to fire some quick fire ones at you to see what how many of these we can fit in. We'll start with Dylan. Dylan says, we know that they purposely built the Michael Voss Oval at Springfield to be the exact dimensions of the Gabba. Are you going to make sure the new Gabba dimensions match that as well, so the training field still matches?
Our training field at Brighton Homes is not yet built. We will design it to the same dimensions as the future Gabba. I think the future Gabba will be 165 long by 135 wide, the same as Optus.
Yep, great. We'll move to Andrew. Andrew's wondering, will the world-class benchmarks for the new Gabba extend to food and beverages?
Yes, I've just been overseas with Ben Kurzweil, the Lions GM of Consumer, and we've just been to SoFi, to Allegiant Stadium, the new Raiders facility in Vegas. We've been to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is the new Atlanta NFL stadium. We're doing benchmarking off all those venues.
Zane says, if the state government wants long-term benefits, do you think the only real option is the RNA, or would there be benefits to QE2 investment that we can't see from the outside?
The government's priorities will always be different to ours. They'll be looking at what happens for cricket. They'll be looking at what happens for other legacy users, Olympics, other, QAS and high-performance sports that are at QSAC. That doesn't mean that we can't align on what some of the other commonalities are across the two, but yeah, they'll have their list and we'll have ours.
And Brad wants to know what the mix is going to be and the carve-up of seating between the QCC, the Gabba Trust and the Lions. Will the Lions extend their seating market or share in the new stadium, or will it be pretty much what it is now?
No, I'd expect that the principal hirer, which in the case of AFL seasons us, will get the bulk of the assets. I mean, whether QCC continues to exist in the new stadium is not for us to determine. That'll be a state government decision. One thing I will note is that it's very rare in global stadium markets for two or three entities to be all running in competition with one another for offering seating products within the stadium. If you go to the United States, as I just did, and propose that to hirers in Major League Baseball or NFL, they just find it gobsmackingly difficult to comprehend that you would get to a premium product point within the sale of ticket assets, and that suddenly the QCC, the Gabba members and the Lions are all trying to flog the same product at different price points with different unintegrated strategies. And I think that really needs a long, hard look by government and ourselves as we move into this new venue.
Well, Jake, we're so grateful for you making time. I think we are going to lose you any second, so we should wrap it up. But before we do, just quickly, the dates to look out for roughly. When do you think we're going to see the design of the new Gabba? When do you think we're going to hear about a replacement venue? What are the time frames people should be expecting?
Yeah, contingency venue work. I expect in the next, sometime in probably late March or early April 2023, we'll have some comment to make publicly around what those different options look like for the Lions. Whether we get a final decision with us in government, that might take a little bit longer. The Gabba designs will really accelerate from now, and I think by the end of 2023 we'll have some really good understanding of what that looks like, and then there'll be an exciting process there. I expect when this one gets built, it'll be more like Cross River Rail or Queen's Wharf, where there'll be regular updates and opportunities for the community to come through and live cams. And I think Powderfinger were playing in the Cross River Rail tunnel yesterday. Hopefully, if they're going to play for us, they might play at our opening match in 2030. But either way, that's the sort of stuff to look out for. It's exciting space, and we've got plenty to, by 2030, we'll have probably the best AFL infrastructure anywhere in the country, in this city. And that's really, really exciting for the Lions.
Yeah, well, we'll have to get you back in later this year in person when you're feeling well and you got some more updates for us. I did realise we had one more that came from Amy. When in 2032 is the Olympics going to run? Is it going to interrupt the AFL season? Do we have any sense on that yet, or that's a while off?
Yeah, we'll be out for nearly all of 2032. By the time they drop in a pitch, athletics track, and then they run the Olympics and the Paralympic Games out of it, it'll be out of there for the full year. So that's factored into our contingency plan. Thinking where we play there in 2032.
Well, another strong case for the RNA then, I think. Jake, just before Zoom cuts you off, we'll let you go. Thank you so much for dropping by to chat, even when you're not feeling great.
Thanks, gentlemen. It looks beautiful there, and I look forward to being in person next time.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jake, as we wrap up the Zoom chat with him there. Normally, Mike, when you're on a Zoom chat on your computer on the free version, it counts down how long you had left. I got a warning about 10 minutes ago saying you got 10 minutes left and was just trying to fire through them. I've just realized as a result, I don't know if you got one question in about the Gabba. So I'm sorry about that, Mike.
I've got to confess, people obviously they're listening can't see this, but I actually bashed out a quick story there while
The gun of Mike Whiting. This is who you are.
No, this is I'd been sitting on this story. I was hoping to not sitting on it. It was just an injury update for the Suns, and I wanted to punch it out. And I thought I actually might try and get this rolling now because I really want to get this in as quick as possible. So while Jake was in, I'm going to go back and have a listen to some of what Jake said because I missed 5 or 10 minutes there. So I'm glad you kept the show going, Dom.
Well, we covered it there. Anyway, look, we are just about to get to your best 22. I can see you've started it there. So do you know what? We've got some questions to read out. Let's go to some questions where you finish off your best 22 and I'll address some of the questions here. We'll play off our question music. And thank you to everybody who has got in touch with questions as always. You can tweet us questions, you can send us questions individually on Instagram, or you can obviously sign up as a Patreon supporter and send us questions on Patreon, the Raw Deal on there, or the Facebook group that comes out of that also. I'm going to start with a long one today. This one comes in from Sammy. There's a fair bit to get through in Sammy's message here. The first point is just about the AFLW and the kick in the guts that is, which we've covered off extensively at the top, and I think we're all feeling that a little bit. Sammy also suggests potentially getting an umpire on, one of the local umpires who's made it big in the big leagues, to come on and explain the 2032 rule changes, which I really wish we'd thought about doing maybe a month ago, because that would have been a brilliant idea. I'm not sure if we can fit it into our bump around one episode, but we can think about that, Sammy. But the main point of Sammy's message is about the academy. Now, Mike, last week on the show, I was talking about the Lions Academy and how I thought it could be a potential room for improvement, considering the giant that the AFL is. Sammy has a couple of thoughts that she's sharing here. She says, "You ask about the academy. Well, I can tell you from a parent's point of view, it was nothing but a money spinner. My eldest was asked to join and we were requested to hand over several $100s. We were promised individual development programs that each kid would get equal time with the coaches. And then even when you left, you'd get a development program to continue working with. This never happened. Coaches were just parents who came from suburban clubs and they favored the kids they knew. The fact we have 4 academy players on the list, I think is more good luck than good management. Harris wasn't even picked up by them. They had to be begged by a coach from Aspley." Now, this is obviously just Sammy's perspective, but this is explosive stuff. Sammy goes on to say, "It was a very haphazard and chaotic experience, and my son found it very disappointing." Just skipping ahead a little bit there, Sammy goes on to say, "You're not allowed to say this stuff because it feels like you're not being loyal to the Lions if you are, but it isn't functioning as it should. The best thing about the AFL in Queensland is that it didn't, at least for a while, smack of the private school elitism that the Melbourne clubs have. But the Lions Academy at stages when we were involved was going down that path and it was a bit disappointing to the point my son walked away. He did meet a good coach there and there was something good about it, but the networking and elitism had become a problem." She finishes by saying, "I'm not on my own in this opinion. I know several families who've left too. However, that's why I'm messaging you, as I know I'd be accused of not being loyal if I said these things publicly. And we really feel like the academy potentially could just start again and have an enormous scope." Now, that's a very emotive post from Sammy that clearly has had an experience there, a negative experience with the academy. It's an interesting one because, as we've said, Mike, you and I not being involved with local footy, we're not on the ground. We don't know that. But it is interesting that after we speak about the academy, the one piece of feedback we get is that one. I am always mindful when it comes to footy, you're dealing with such sensitive issues because you can just get one bad coach in who can favour someone and the whole thing's ruined. Or, I mean, in my circumstance, you can think that the coach is biased for not picking you, whereas in reality, it's because he actually is good at what he's doing. And that particular coach has seen you play and knows you belong in Division 5. And that's, you know what, I've let that go. And my coach Murray, from when I was in under-14s, I've totally forgiven Murray at the Vultures. He knew exactly what he was doing. I belonged in Division 5. So that's fine. But my point is to say, when you're tying in individual stories and hopes and dreams, you do end up with a messy situation. But I think there's some really interesting ideas there from Sammy that potentially at least shows, if nothing else, that things could be a bit more organized, a bit more streamlined. And I don't know what era of the academy that particularly was, but it is something that you do think if you got the best people involved and really streamlined the system from start to finish and went out there trying to find the best talent, you would think you'd be finding a couple every year, wouldn't you?
You'd think so. And to that point, it is an look, whichever way we cut it, it is an advantage for Northern clubs.
Yes, yeah.
To have this academy.
Yeah.
And bidding systems and all that aside, but just having access to players within your region, which we mentioned last week or a couple of weeks ago, how broad the region is, which makes it so difficult to cover, but it's also a big leg up.
Yeah.
I tell you what it does do though. It tells us the best way for us to address this is honestly getting someone on from the academy, which I'm sure we'll be able to do.
Yes, is it obvious yet that we're an independent podcast that we've read that one out? But its fullness, but this is the point, is that it is a really interesting, engaging area of conversation, and it would be right to give a bit of a right of reply to someone from the academy 100%. And hear what their story or the way they're running things is, because at the end of the day, they would be dealing with so many kids coming through who all have the dream of, you know, being the Harris Andrews or the Kitty Coleman. And so, you know, I'm not pretending, I don't want to sit here, you know, as someone who's a radio announcer and go, that'd be so easy to do. This is how you run an academy. Yeah. I know nothing.
I'm removed from this too, Dom, to be honest, because it'd be nice to say that I'm across every corner of the club, but it's just not reality when you're dealing with a couple of, anyway, I'm not going to go into my job, but I don't know as much about this as other people, and Sammy's experience here is one experience, and I'm sure there's other people listening to this probably going, you know what, I've had something similar. A lot of people going, what is that person talking about? My experience is totally different. I've had a great time. My kid came through and was looked after and whatever, but the best thing we can do is probably get someone on from the academy, I think. And
that makes you think we've got to dig deeper on this.
It does.
We've got to dig a little bit deeper. So we'll leave that with us. We will at some stage this year get someone from the academy on. And thank you so much, Sammy, for signing up as a Patreon supporter and for sharing that really, that brilliant feedback or that brilliant insight there. A couple of questions, Mike. The first one comes from more questions. Josh says, I don't know if you guys are avid Disney watchers, but it seems that Mike might have been stolen for their recent movie, Strange World. Do you know the film Strange World?
I'm nervous. No, I don't.
We'll need to put this picture up on the Patreon, on Twitter maybe as well. Josh has sent this through. This is the character voiced by Jake Gyllenhaal, if you know who Jake Gyllenhaal is.
I do know Jake Gyllenhaal.
In Strange World, with a comparison picture that he's given us to you there as well. And I've got to say, there's a bit of likeness in that one, isn't there? I don't know where that photo of you's come from, where Josh has found that photo, but
that's quite funny.
There's a bit of do you see it?
I do.
There's a little bit of likeness.
Mind you, people say that I look like my dog, so I'm not sure.
Well, you know what, Josh, you might have to tweet that to us and we can retweet that.
I actually don't mind that. I've got a good laugh out of that. It's good. Yeah, tweet it to us, Josh, and then we can share it on social media.
It is. It's always risky whenever you tell someone they've got a lookalike. As my co-host learnt some years ago when he told someone we were working with in radio that they looked like Jonah Hill, thinking that person would take it well. And they did not take it well, but that's fine. That's fine. We've all moved on. And one more question before we get to your best 22. This one comes from Annie. Annie says, after last week, I think we had that new segment suggestion of glass half that came through. This one comes from Annie. Annie says, this is not so much a new segment as a new suggestion generally. Could the two of you find a Lions away game this year on a day that Mike isn't required to be covering the Suns and offer your own press red for Ed style commentary that we could all listen into live streamed as a soundtrack to the game from home? Bonus points if you do it for a Lions game when Dwayne Russell is the commentator so we can all avoid him. look, I don't mind the idea. Press red for Dom and Mike. I mean, neither of us have the faintest clue about calling a game of footy.
I was going to say, who's the play-by-play caller? Clearly you.
Yeah. Well, I just don't. I mean, there is a press red for it. There's an element when you don't want me fording over Zach Bailey every time he gets the ball.
No,
I should mention, last Thursday night out at Springfield, out at Brighton Homes Arena, I was sitting in the grandstand in the last quarter of the game, and there were a few Raw Deal listeners behind who, every time Zach Bailey got the ball or got tackled, were yelling out, "Did you catch that, Dom?" He got tackled at one point and someone said, "It's all right, Dom, he's okay," which I thought was good fun. But I don't mind the idea. I don't know how you'd sync it up perfectly to the play, which might be a bit annoying to watch.
Yep.
I can sense from your tone you're shutting this down.
No, I'm just thinking through the logistics. I actually think it's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
But I just don't know who'd want to listen to us for 2 hours calling a game.
I mean,
people are
you.
Listening. We're at, what, an hour and something into this. I guess
an hour
people
or 10
are still
almost,
listening.
Yeah,
so
I think. Yeah, who knows? 2 hours. I mean, compared to Dwayne Russell calling a game, I'm actually going to be a contrarian. I like Dwayne Russell. I find him fun. I find him a bit charming.
Yeah. Well, not for Mike. Not so much, no.
You don't think he's crazy good?
No, I definitely don't think he's crazy good. No. Bit too much chaos ball for me.
Yeah, well, I think the thing for me is Dwayne Russell, did you ever play those AFL video games? You ever played one of them?
No.
Right, so like any sporting game, they can be a bit clunky because obviously a commentator has gone in, recorded 60 different cuts of a line, and then the game pieces them together for whatever happens. Sometimes listening to Dwayne Russell call a game, you feel like you're listening to AFL Live 2004 commentary.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
It can be a little bit like that. And I mean, maybe at one stage you and I should go through our favourite commentators in the comp. I mean, I think we'd both have Hutto probably as number one.
Yeah, I think
big
so.
Big Anthony Hudson fans here. But certainly if we could find a Dwayne. I feel like it'd be a Lions GWS game in Canberra on a Saturday afternoon. Dwayne would be calling it, and people might tune into you and me.
Yep.
I don't know.
Maybe.
We'll see. Maybe if people keep messaging us and saying they want that, then we can look into that. Let's look now to your best 22, Mike. I think I've padded long enough for you to finish it here.
I've got down 22 names.
Is this going to be the 22 you publish on AFL.com.au?
I say yes, but
you want to give room.
I do want to give room though, because I probably will look at this tomorrow and go, when I have to file it, I have to file on, actually I've got till Wednesday to file, and I might look at it and go, what was I thinking there?
Well, this is the first draft. This is exciting. You're hearing the first draft of Mike Whiting's best 22.
And I'll probably go through it and realize that I've left out Harris Andrews or something because I've scribbled names down here in a real hurry.
All right, we'll take it away. Let's go. Start at the back.
We'll go back line.
Yep.
And this is probably the easiest one. I find it difficult. Okay, so under the assumption here that Darcy Gardner is unavailable for round one. That's how I'm picking this. If Darcy Gardner's available, clearly he's in.
Sure.
There's just a huge question mark. So I'm guessing he's going to be out at this stage. He hasn't played any footy yet.
Okay.
Chris Fagan said last week there's a big question mark on him. So my big contentious decision is to go with Darragh Joyce.
Oh, okay.
In his position. So
I hear he played well in the VFL practice match on Friday night. Yeah. They were raving about him.
I've got Darragh Joyce, Harris Andrews, Brandon Starcevic, Daniel Rich, Jack Payne, and Kitty Coleman as my back six. Should I go?
Jump to the wingers.
The two wingers. I've got Darcy Wilmot, and Jared Berry.
Yep, and what about your four in the centre?
My four in the centre are McInerney, Neil, McCluggage and Dunkley.
That's pretty easy.
And my forwards are McCarthy, Hipwood, Bailey, Cameron, Danaher, Gunston.
Yep.
Again, pretty easy.
Relatively straightforward.
So now my bench, some tricky, some not.
Yep.
Showing my bias here a bit. My spare defender is Noah Answorth.
Okay.
Now that he's back and played some footy. Cam Rayner.
Yep.
Captain Versatile, and this way I don't have to commit to playing him in defence. Will Ashcroft and Dane Zorko.
There we go. So you think Zork will be fit, or you just...
Yeah, I do. No, okay. I think Zork will be fit, so...
So interestingly, you think Berry will be fit as well? Jared Berry?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's good news then if those two do...
So that's the premise of how I've picked that team, obviously. I think they're going to be fit and available, and if they are, I'm picking them in. Now, if they're not, obviously, we know... Things can change in the next week, but that's the proviso. I'll pick them being fit. So,
and who's your tactical sub?
Oh, I haven't thought that far.
Throwing you right on the bus. Yeah, well, yeah, think about it now. It's your first draft. Give me a tactical sub. Tactical sub. The ones you've left out
let's go Dev Robertson.
Okay.
Because I think there's enough cover in that team there with defense. I've got Noah Answorth on the bench. I've got Cam Rayner on the bench. That's enough guys that can go into defense.
Yep.
And I think there's enough. And I think the mid-half forward is probably the tactical option there. And if Oscar McInerney goes down, well, that's a bridge they'll have to cross.
Well, but that I've told you this. That's why we brought Josh Dunkley to the club.
Yeah, exactly.
Dunkley in the ruck.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to happen at some point this year. Dunkley's going to take a ruck contest.
So before I ask your thoughts on that, I guess we might as well get to the difficult one I found was the Darcy Gardner hole, which it is.
Yep.
So... Brisbane hasn't had to answer this question during the preseason because they played against small opposition forward lines. Generally, they've been able to play Cam Rayner. They've been able to play all the small guys down there at once. It hasn't really mattered. There's been Harris Andrews and I think a half of Jack Payne against Sydney and three quarters of Jack Payne against Geelong. And they've been able to get away with it. But I think Port Adelaide have got three tall forwards. Clearly, they're going to play Dixon Georgiades. Sorry, if I
Marshall.
Dixon Georgiades Marshall. Round two, Melbourne, three talls.
Mm.
Western Bulldogs, around three talls.
Maybe four or five talls. Who knows what they're doing?
So I don't think it's something you can skirt around. And no, there's a bit of debate about this, and Cam Rayner can play taller, and Brent, but there's a limit on that. Cam's 187, 188, and yes, he is a powerful guy and plays above his head. He's got a great leap. He marks it well overhead, but we're talking about 195, 200 centimetre plus. There's a big height discrepancy here. So for a guy that's not – that's had, you know, two preseason games in defence, not Darcy Gardner's not tall either. He's 192 or 193, but he's played there his whole life. So I just feel like you need a genuine third tall defender. There's not many on Brisbane's list. There's Darragh Joyce. There's Froggy Lester, who I noticed a few people on social media are a little bit off the idea of maybe putting Froggy in there. He did just come back from a hammy that kept him out for 3 or 4 weeks, so I'm not too down on the idea of putting Frog in there.
I would probably sooner go, personally, Lester over Darragh Joyce just because we've seen what Lester can do.
I wouldn't argue too vehemently against you there.
And he's had a few great – like I always remember, was it the finals in 2020 that he played on Jack Riewoldt and played brilliantly that particular
night? And honestly played really well against Paddy Dangerfield in the prelim as well.
Yes, he
did. Was one of the better players for Brisbane that night as well.
So, look, that's –
can do it, yeah.
But in saying that, I do know someone who is at the VFL reserves practice match on Friday night who's quite a cynical footy watcher. They rarely say positive things about what they see, and they were really impressed with Darragh Joyce. They said he was probably the best on ground alongside Jared Lyons for the Lions on Friday night. So, I mean, maybe Darragh Joyce could come in and be the surprise packet of the season. I don't know.
And it would be totally a surprise. Obviously, he's played a handful of games over 6 years at St Kilda, but he is a defence first type of guy.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad thing in this instance.
No.
Jack Payne clearly trying to be more of an – I mean, he's shown – at AFL level, he can intercept, defend and intercept. He looks like he's going to continue playing that role this year. It looks like he will literally take the role of Marcus Adams, the same style of play even that Marcus showed us last year and previous season. So I think with Andrews and Payne able to intercept and provide a bit of that intercept marking, I don't think it's as necessary that the third guy can do that.
But I do think you're right. I agree with you. A tall defender is necessary. I just think those first three rounds that you mentioned, you don't want to be halfway through the game and that third tall is tearing
And I was going to say, I know we'll, and maybe the Lions will go a different way and clubs will talk about system and it's not one defender and they don't get isolated. And there's some merit to that. But also I think there's some, a lot of teams will just quick kick, go long, go to contests.
Yeah.
Attacking teams are smart enough to figure out mismatches and isolate them and whatnot. So I just think it's too much of a risk when it doesn't need to be taken. So that's a trick. Other names there, I guess McKenna missing out.
Yep.
I just like Wilmot.
Yeah.
And I know I've got Wilmot on a wing there. I do just like Wilmot. I think he's a better ball user. I think he offers just as much run. I love his tenacity, and that's not to say that McKenna doesn't have that tenacity. I think I've just got in my head what he did in those three finals games, and I'm like, you know what? It's his spot, and he's done nothing wrong to lose it. In fact, I think he's done enough to win it this year, so I'm just starting with him in front there.
All right. Well, look, it's going to be fascinating. Obviously, the place to be is going to be the Raw Deal Facebook group for our Patreon members.
We will have
Thursday.
Something to chat about round one selection.
Oh, we absolutely will. Plenty. So for those who maybe are just joining the podcast, coming back from a preseason where they haven't followed footy, the news is this. If you sign up as a $10 a month Patreon of ours on the Raw Deal on Patreon, what you'll get is access to a private Facebook group. And in this private Facebook group, Mike and I are going to go live every day that teams drop, every team selection for the year, except probably the bye week. There's no need to. That week, but no. Maybe we'll do it for fun anyway. I don't know, just for old time's sake. But we will jump in and discuss for 10 minutes or so, sort of a bonus mini episode, team selection. So maybe that could be your new Thursday, or if it's a Thursday night game, Wednesday night tradition this year, is tune in to hear Mike and I discussing the teams as they do drop on Facebook Live. So, next week's the week to be on board for that. If you haven't jumped in yet, get in there, make sure it all works, make sure you signed up to Facebook, you're on the page as well. So we're all ready to go. It's going to be a massive, massive week next week. It's so thrilling that we're almost here. I want to ask you, how are you spending your last free weekend for gosh, I don't know, till October.
Yeah,
not October, sorry, till late November, early December. Next time you have a totally free weekend, Mike, there'll be Christmas stuff up in the shops. I don't want to scare you.
Yeah.
But that's how long it's going to be.
Yeah, it will be. It'll be a long time. Hopefully one of those bye weekends I might be able to sneak off. But yeah, basically you're trying, if you're not covering footy, you're still trying to watch it because you've got to comment about other teams, talk about other clubs. Opponents coming up for Brisbane or Gold Coast, you want to keep an eye on them, who's in, you know. So, yeah, it's a long time. I haven't thought about this weekend specifically yet. I am actually going to the Broncos on Friday night. It'll be the first Broncos game I've been to in probably 7 years, I reckon. My sister and my probably 8 years, actually. My sister and my niece and nephew. So I'm going to head along with them. That's Friday night. Got running coaching Saturday morning, which is every Saturday morning. So looking forward to that. And then, yeah, not much. I actually like to relax. I'm not trying to get out and do a ton of stuff because, yeah, the season's busy and I'll probably try and keep it pretty low key.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun, really. I mean, I think it's an interesting position, the NRL in Brisbane, because while you don't want to read too much into round one, it looks like there may be two strong Brisbane NRL teams this year. I mean, the Dolphins, a shock win over the Roosters, and the Broncos, a shock win over the Panthers.
This is something that came up in our Facebook group.
I did see this, actually.
And was a great place to get there. And I did read this but didn't comment. Just the round two clash, it's Brisbane and Melbourne, as in the AFL, Brisbane and Melbourne on a Friday night up against the Broncos and Redcliffe.
Yes.
At Suncorp Stadium, which is enormous. Even if Redcliffe for some reason bomb the next couple of weeks in the NRL, it won't matter. That'll be a sellout at Suncorp Stadium, and that's the first home game for Brisbane. So
I reckon it was Dan who posted that in the group. So thank you for that, Dan. And you're right, it looks like a scheduling dilemma.
It just grew extra legs yesterday with Redcliffe winning its first historic first game. Are we calling them
Redcliffe? We are calling them Redcliffe. Aren't they not going with that? Aren't they the Dolphins?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going with anyway. The Dolphins.
Do you know what? I'm so with you on this. I kind of feel like so many expansion clubs in recent years across all competitions have struggled for an identity. You've got one, Dolphins. Claim it. Anyway, Wayne Bennett knows more about things than I do. He seems to know what he's across. Look, next time you hear from us, we are going to be within 1 week of round one. It's so thrilling to say that. The countdown is well and truly on to that game against Port Adelaide. Join us next week for a special guest who we're lining up for chats about that Best 22 and for everything to get a little bit more real. We'll see you here on The Raw Deal then.